Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
To the Creep Hive, which is today. That means we're talking about Kate.
I got creeped the other night.
Oh.
By the way, and the general feedback from last week is that people enjoy the giddiness and they'd like that to remain.
Excellent. The glibness, yeah. For instance.
The glibness, the giddiness, the everything else. I would say it was in our top five episodes. I can't even remember what we spoke about story-wise. All I remember is thinking, I'm having so much fun talking shit with these people.
I don't think you should be letting people in on how the sausage is made. This is actually a really, really hard job.
Well, it is.
It's a hard job to do, guys.
What a joke.
No, we can't. We have to acknowledge our privilege. We have the best fucking time.
Happy. It's maximum fun. I agree. But let's get fucking serious.
The whole tone has really changed since downstairs when you called Cassie a tree and told her hair looked like a bouffant. And then Cassie said that you were, I don't know.
I thought that was a pleasant. Was that not a compliment?
I named the tree, I just let go over my head. It hit me on the way over, but I just let it go past.
It's just when she approaches
from
me.
Who you look like? You look like John Goodman in Kingpin or something. Jen's wearing some glasses.
Okay.
They're a real choice. Actually, it's John Goodman in fucking Big Lebowski is what I'm thinking of.
But all good things.
All good
Speaking
things.
Speaking of John, can we have a moment for John Wayne Gacy?
Yeah, we can.
Because you may or may not know that a documentary is coming out on Disney about this fucking creepazoid. I'm getting the deets up here because it is dark. So I don't remember this show in particular. It was a guy and his friend, a Disney show, two young men, one guy and his friend.
Drake and Josh.
Well done, Cass.
Yeah.
Right, so the producer of Drake, that was incredible.
Was that not Nickelodeon?
Yeah, it was.
Is Nickelodeon Disney?
No, it isn't. But you're going to reference this documentary that we referenced at least three times on this very podcast. The one that's coming out about the Nickelodeon kids, Dan Schneider. We had a conversation about it. The creator was mentioned in Jeanette McCurdy's book.
Yeah.
What alternate universe have we jumped into that I'm the one remembering stories?
Okay, Dan Schneider is a bad man.
Yeah.
There's another one on a different show Could be the same show, could be different. His name is Brian Peck. Right? Creepy man involved in lots of children's television shows. That one, Drake and Josh.
Because you're referencing, I saw that Drake did an interview this week where he said he was... Didn't Drake come and do an interview and he said that he was abused?
He did. Drake Bell is now, I think it's coming out in a few days, detailed sexual abuse and extensive abuse at 15 by Brian Peck. So that guy, Drake Bell, has his own issues on the go as well.
What kind?
As in, I believe that he may have predatorized as well.
Oh God, right.
So I think this might be his combat, his sort of attempt at...
Like,
was diddled, can diddle. Now, speaking of diddles, so another guy on the show who was a kind of their friend on the show, played their friend, there was a snippet on Twitter of this documentary to be released. Wait for this. He was at this guy, Brian Peck's gaff, okay? Mm-hmm. He was like, the gaff was strange. It had like pinball machines and like a trap, right?
Yeah.
A kid trap.
Okay, yeah.
And then in one, I think it was the basement, he described it as Planet of the Apes, all of the stuff from the set, the like amazing kind
Mad.
Of...
Mad.
Amazing stuff. So your man was wandering around there and there was only one thing that stood out that was strange, and it was this fucking painting of a clown amongst all of the Planet of the Apes kind of carry-on. And Brian Peck was behind him, touring him around the place.
Mm.
And he goes over to the painting and he's like, oh, it's strange. You know, what's the story with this? Brian Peck, I'm glad you pointed that out. That's by John Wayne Gacy.
Oh.
Right? To this kid who was 14 or 15 at the time.
Yeah.
So apparently this guy, Brian Peck, had started up this pen pal relationship with John Wayne Gacy in prison.
Right.
Had a stack of letters from John Wayne beside his bed.
Oh, God.
What a freak.
What a fucking freak. So anyway, that's one of the freaks of the week.
There's Jen now looking like John Goodman in The Big Lebowski.
Let's have a look.
Spit. Yeah.
I'll take it.
We've got to put that picky up with the episode.
Guys, can I play this without permission?
Of course.
So it's from a dear listener.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know what I was giving permission for there.
I've asked her for permission, but she's in Sydney. And I think when people send a little voices for us, I think to myself...
They want this to be made public to thousands of people.
I'd say so.
Go on.
All right, let's play it. Let me turn it up. Turn it up, Jen. So I will.
Okay, is this thing on? Great. this story comes direct from my friend at work. And you're just not going to expect where it goes. So basically... she was, you know, on her period, having one of those days, and she was getting in the shower. And obviously when you get in the shower, well, I don't know, obviously, normally this is, you know, what I do and what she does. When you get in the shower, you take your tampon out.
Oh, news
gonna
to
me. Going to have to stop her right there.
Going to stop her right
Never
there.
Never have I ever.
No.
Wouldn't even think about it.
No, wouldn't think about it necessarily.
It must be an Australian thing.
You want to, you know. Get up in there and give it a good clean.
Okay, just a
you
FYI
don't need
here.
To go too far.
You absolutely don't need to scrub inside your vulvic canal.
No, as we know, you shouldn't touch it. Leave it alone.
Leave it alone.
Let it's the pH do the pH thing.
Exactly. It's a self-cleaning object.
But on this occasion, she forgot to take her tampon out. And she was in the shower, you know, washing herself down, having a good old time, gets out of the shower.
No, she was doing something else. She was doing something else. If this is going to impact her in a way, like, it wouldn't impact you. It's not like the water travels back up.
What do you mean?
Like, what's going to happen here?
Wait.
Wraps her towel around her, uses the towel to, you know, pat down. Oh, God, I didn't realize there was a time limit. Okay, so she's using her towel to pat down and dry off. And she can feel in between her legs the tampon string, and she's like, oh, that's so annoying, I didn't realize I'd forgotten to take my tampon out. That's okay, you know, she'll deal. So she goes to the toilet. The important note of this story is that she's not able to see without her glasses. Everything is a blur.
Relatable.
She goes over to the bathroom and over to the toilet, sorry, and she pulls out the string. She hasn't got her glasses on, so she pulls out the string and then she looks down in her hand and she's like, "Huh, that's weird. There's a really big clot come out with the tampon string."
No.
Okay, next part. And so she's looking down at the clot and she hasn't got her glasses on, so everything's a bit blurry. And then the clot
moves.
Grows legs.
Ah! No.
Grows and she legs.
That it's not a clot, it's a huntsman spider.
That was up her funny! No.
Oh my God.
There was a huntsman spider inside of her.
Spiders we're up inside you.
Oh my God, no. They really do need to give it a good clean in Australia.
In spider.
A big, black, hairy huntsman. I don't know if you've seen pictures of them. God. Maybe Google it. Basically, they can be as big as your hand, if not big. This one was large.
Oh my God.
She's looking down at her hand and the clot has grown legs and she's like, "Oh, fuck." So she throws it at the wall. Sorry, don't know if I should swear. Anyway, throws it at the wall because she's freaking out, immediately lays herself down in child's pose on the bathroom floor, completely naked, because she's traumatized. There was a huntsman spider all up in her. She was basically assaulted by this spider.
Oh, my God. I would not have assumed the child's pose, thus exposing your ass and vag to whatever else wants to wander in there. It was obviously a trauma response. I'm not like victim shaming there, but like I just would be like, "Oh, I need to shut up shop and never uncross my legs ever again."
You can never lose sight of the spider.
Oh my God, I know.
Rule number one.
I know, she needs to get her glasses fast, locate it.
Trap it.
Oh my God! Jesus.
Horrendous. Now, did we think it was in the tampon?
She goes on the Voicey to say, "There's probably it was in the towel she was drying herself off with, and that it relocated. She could even have kind of dried herself and, in the process, stuffed it up inside her."
My God!
Jesus. Isn't that fucking? And then that
you would never trust again.
No, she was like, "Okay, well then the string that she thought was pulling was one of the spider's legs."
Jesus. Oh my
God. It's incredible stuff.
Meanwhile, I in the book I just read, and I thought of you immediately, Jen, and then you, Cassie, sort of secondly.
That happens often, doesn't it?
No, you'll understand why, and you'll be glad. You'll say, "I don't want to be the first person someone thinks
of." Like, I didn't want to do that talk later either.
Oh, we were invited to do this fucking talk of true Cass.
I didn't realize.
I thought you were offloading
it. Part of it.
Yeah.
I thought you had been trying to get out of it.
No.
Anyway,
you just wanted your contact details.
It was the adult equivalent of someone being like, "Do you have Jen and Cassie's numbers? I'm having a party."
Yeah, exactly.
And you saying, "Okay," and handing them over and then patiently waiting for your own invite, only for nothing to be forthcoming.
It's not
going to
be party, guys. It's going to be boring.
I think you misunderstood.
No, I understood clearly. They asked your contact details. I would have been invited to that meeting, you guys. They would have mentioned beforehand that I was doing it.
It is strange.
It is, and also it's in the weeds. Okay. No one listening knows what you're talking about.
Never mind.
Yeah,
so listen, I was reading a book this week called Everything, Nothing, Someone. It's a hard title to remember. It's a memoir by Alice Carrière, okay? Creeps are often like, "Oh, I like your book recos."
Yes.
Here's a book reco. Mm. It's amazing. It's all about her decades-long kind of psychosis and mental illness and stuff like that, and it's brilliant, and her whole life's really fascinating because she's like born to this insane privilege but also has like experienced some very fucked up parenting. Anyway, in one of the kind of episodes in the book, she's in a psych ward and she's taking a shit one night and she notices like this really long, like skinny little, and she's like, "Is that a shit?" Like coming out of her asshole.
Okay.
And so she kind of like reaches back and sort of like investigates a bit, gives it a tug. It's an 8-inch worm.
Fucking yes!
8 inches.
Tapeworm. They can come up to 10 feet.
Huge. And she washed it Like, she is us. Because she gave it a little wash and she gave it a little pat down to figure out what the real examination of it. And then in the the people in charge of the psych ward were like, she went, initially when I was reading it, I was like, oh, I wonder if this is a bit of a hallucination.
Yeah.
But then she brings the worm to show the nurses.
Yeah.
And so then they interact and you realize it's really happening. And she's like, I need to go to the emergency room. Like, this 8-inch worm has just come out of my asshole. And they're like, doesn't seem like an emergency though.
Exactly.
And she's like, something emerged.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So wouldn't you love, all I could think was, I would love that sensation of like extracting an 8-inch worm from my asshole.
I totally am with you.
Yeah.
Well, funny you mentioned tapeworms, because 3 days ago...
you just had one.
A parasitic worm was found in a man's brain after he continued to eat undercooked bacon for the majority of his life.
Oh, I can't. Middle-aged man...
in the US, developed a parasitic infection in his brain after eating uncooked bacon.
Uncooked bacon. Now, there is a girl on TikTok
so easy
who
to cook it
loves
fully.
An old... but is he's probably not bothering at all. The girl
not.
Who loves the raw steak on TikTok.
Have come not across come her? Across her.
Oh. But like, you know, some steak is next to raw.
I mean,
like,
I
if
like,
you order it, like tartare
bleu.
Or bleu.
But this is, she'd just be chomping down on a store, like a grocery store steak.
I'd
say
wrong.
She now has an iron deficiency.
But
having also had an obsession with drinking blood myself.
Really?
That sounds like, do you remember
Pica.
I was anemic? Yeah.
Pica. This guy, 52, headed in to the hospital with brain problems.
And is like a parasite just in the driving seat or something? Well, like making all his decisions for him, and his friends and family are like, it's so weird. He only ever wants to like grub around in the mud, eating earthworms.
Exactly. Being amongst others with...
him being with like-minded
exactly.
friends.
Like-minded parasitic friends. This fucking thing is huge inside his brain, but this is a... It's larva. It's a tapeworm larva. This has happened many times before. It's specific to raw pork. Don't eat raw pork.
Right.
Right.
Noted.
It can infect humans who eat raw pork that hasn't been cooked, or those who consume shit containing the worm's eggs.
Must so, lay off the shit.
I know. So.
Give that a Prelent.
So look. It is not a good idea. Small enclosed sacs or cysts of the worm's larvae accumulate, usually in the person's intestines. But this can happen, like it did happen to this man, developed another condition called cystic ursosis. I'm definitely saying that wrong. It's a version of the infection where the cysts embed themselves in all manner of tissue, such as muscle or brain. And it obviously is a pretty bad scene.
And where is your man from?
The US.
I've got a Chinese man.
What's he doing?
Also insisting on eating undercooked pork.
Oh.
Leave it alone.
Why?
Lads.
It's one of the meats now that wouldn't appeal.
Exactly.
Undercooked.
I'm talking about unappealing. There's helpful video accompanying the article showing just slabs of raw pork.
Yeah, no, that
is like, guys,
color,
you've got to resist.
Texture. Ratio of meat to fat, none of it seems right there with the raw pork.
I know, but it's so delicious when it's crispy. Why would
you
opt
for it
to be... Yeah,
that's what you want to render all the fat off.
And genuinely, it is one of the fastest cooking meats.
Yeah.
So he was hundreds of tapeworms found in his brain, exactly like your friend. Yeah, like too many.
You just wouldn't think it.
They haven't...
Giving you any more details.
Well, nothing kind of concrete on what happened to him next, but they found more tapeworms in his lungs and his chest. He was riddled. I just cannot. So they said that he has recovered after they depressurized his skull and dewormed his brain.
So they must have operated and had to remove it manually.
What? How the fuck do you deworm a brain?
You get in there
and
pluck out
the bits.
So
much of the brain looks wormy.
That's true.
You wouldn't know what you were deworming. And so, yeah, it's exactly as you described the neurocysticercosis. Yeah, got to stay away from the shit. Got to cook the pork. Now I'm just like, for some reason I'm picturing like just being friends with that person who's absolutely riddled, and I'm just like
being beside them,
yeah,
feeling uneasy. Yeah. Can I show you a picture and get you can guess what it is?
Yeah. No, I could bring it back here. No, no. Oh, that was very hot. It's like a coconut.
Interesting.
In an inside out eyeball.
A coconut in an inside out eyeball.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to say it is an avocado.
Is it a baby's head?
It's a fucking hairball inside a woman. This happened.
Coconut is accurate. You could see why I think it was a coconut.
It is. This woman was addicted to pulling hair out. Trichinosis, I can never say that, like an addiction to hair pulling, but she was eating the hair.
Ooh.
And you'd think, I'd be like, Grant, nothing bad can happen here.
No,
absolutely it can. A gigantic hairball inside her, measuring 15 centimetres removed from her stomach.
What?
She was 38 years old. She was saying to the docs she was feeling nauseous, vomiting, had a swollen abdomen, arrived in the hospital after suffering dramatic weight loss, and they were like, I'm sorry to say, ma'am, you're bald and all of your hair on your head is now lodged inside your intestines.
Oh my God. So was it a very like dense,
totally
hard
so
ball of hair?
Yeah, she was hammer and tongs. Is it the case? Oh no, that was an episode of some makey-uppy medical, never mind. But this woman had an operation. She had a secondary 4 centimeters hairball nestled deeper inside her bowel.
Oh,
and she was suffering from a syndrome called Rapunzel syndrome.
The fucking names for these things.
It's amazing. Only documented 88 times ever before in medical literature.
And is Rapunzel syndrome referring to the eating of the hair or the hair becoming lodged?
The Rapunzel syndrome, I would imagine the hair becoming lodged inside her as an eating, because there is the syndrome by the name of trichotillomania, and that's a disorder that can develop in somebody, and that's the irresistible urge to pull out your own hair. But some people eat it, some people discard.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Really? Thank you.
What else have we got this week? Have you guys been heard the controversy around Jay Shetty? Did we talk about this already?
No.
You know Jay Shetty?
No.
So he is a he's like a big, how can I say, wellness guru kind of guy. He's a big podcaster. You'd recognize him, right?
Let's have a look at him.
He is a British podcaster, author, and life coach, and the co-founder of Sama Tea. So he's been on like Stephen Bartlett's podcast loads.
Yep.
You'd see him around. He's always doing the rounds in a typical like self-improvement, growth hacking,
he's one of those lads.
Think Like a Monk, The Secret of How to Harness the Power.
Yeah, so this is it, this right? So I'll give you a little bit about his background. I'll go, actually, we'll talk about it because it's a good old tale. So he was born in London to a Hindu family of Indian origin, raised in North London.
Very handsome, Cass.
Very handsome man. Attended Queen's Elizabeth School and went on to graduate from the Cass Business School in London, right? In business school, he met Grangadas, a monk, who invited him to speak at the school. Could you make more noise?
It is the loudest walk across the room ever. Okay, we should say where we are.
I just want to get that
job. It's shining in your eye. Here. Where are we, guys? We're in the Museum of Irish Literature. This is Sophie has a writing residency here, and we're in this fucking amazing room. I'll take
gorgeous
a picture so we can put it up.
It's stunning.
This is the fanciest
high ceilings
place we've ever
beautiful
recorded.
High ceilings, lovely original wooden floor, gorgeous. Like, how high are those windows? They must be like 12 foot, are they?
Ah, yeah.
Jesus,
definitely.
Way more than
way
that.
Way more.
Yeah.
Two Cassies. One
easy
and a half Cassies.
Looking out on the Ivy Gardens.
It's a gorgeous room.
All the Georgian moulding and cornicing up there.
It's not even little. It's a gorgeous room. Anyway, back to Jay Shetty. He He spoke with Granga after a talk he was doing, and he followed him for the remainder of his lecture circuit around the UK. He claims to then have spent 4 summers in India interning at corporations and training with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, known as the Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
And living that monk lifestyle.
Living that monk life. Mumbai.
Hashtag monk life.
Yeah. So he basically began his career in Accenture, and you know, he became kind of a social media coach for the company's executives. His work eventually caught the attention of Arianna Huffington, who hired him to produce videos for the Huffington Post on topics like relationships. So he then he's conducted loads of interviews with multiple public figures. Very well known guy, recognized as a kind of person on the forefront of human development. Really, he has received awards. He's released a book. What did you call it there? Like the living with the monk
life of being.
Think
a monk.
Like a monk. How to harness the power. Load page of positivity and be happy.
Yeah. So by 2019, apparently he is the biggest podcast in the world. His podcast is called On Purpose.
Excuse me.
I know, rude. It was downloaded a measly 64 million times in the first year. We do that a month. That's a 30-day cycle for the free site. We're just not on their radar. And in like 2023, last year, he was interviewing Joe Biden in a podcast that was filmed at the White House. So he's
flying high.
He's also the co-founder of a video production company, Icon Media. And him and his wife launched Samatha in 2022. He joined meditation company Calm as the chief purpose officer in 2022 as well.
Chief purpose officer.
So he's one of these guys, right? One of these lads.
And he's like a real next level one of these lads. Do we know what his net worth is?
That's what was my next question.
Google,
I'm sure he's
Google his net worth there.
Loaded, I'm sure.
You like to hear these kind of things.
So this week, what has happened is, let me bring up the OG article. What has happened is The Guardian have released a piece about his claims. And a lot of what Jay Shetty has claimed to have done or said or been inspired by is all
lies.
Absolute horseshit.
But what
kind of things? I'm always like, oh, why are you shocked that the life coach lied to you? I mean, it's the most grifty career. No, I mean, obviously there's life coaches out there who are like doing good stuff with their clients. But anyone who's doing it at a scale like this,
yeah,
there is a deeply cynical, you know, 100%. Thing underlying it.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I've got a few different figures, vastly different.
Okay.
Either 4 million or 25 million.
I'd say it's close to 25.
I can't believe it.
Million.
But
with the books, with the podcast. He officiated Jen and Ben's wedding.
Oh, that's strange.
Like he's up
that's
there.
That's mad.
Yeah.
Okay, so one website is saying 30 million US dollars, but they have credited a website called canknowledge.com.
Look, we gotta trust them, right? So he's the forefront of self-help gurus, and
I can't believe I've never heard of him.
You do recognize
oh,
him.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like you wouldn't. He's because if you're not in that world, interested
also
in that bullshit,
religious. Like when you're in a world where you believe yourself to be beyond help,
yeah,
as I do. These people,
you're not seeking out.
You're right. Yeah. They're all kind
I'm
of.
I'm not going to seek out a conversation between Jay Shetty and Stephen Bartlett to improve my chaotic life.
No.
You know? But I would go to you two.
Exactly.
Mother of
this is why.
The old gurus.
Now, as they say, nothing changes if nothing changes.
As they say, wherever you go, there you are.
As they say, no, okay.
Fool me once.
I have had a fool me once meme to send you for the last few days.
Now
is
it as good a time
one
as ever?
Group with
oh, about June. Maybe I already sent it.
So among the like high profile guests he's had on his podcast, you've got Michelle Obama, Kim Kardashian, Matt Damon, Kobe Bryant, and he's written the two bestsellers, Think Like a Monk, which is his 2020 memoir self-help guidebook based on his time studying Hinduism, and 2023's 8 Rules of Love for Helping People Better Maneuver Their Romantic Relationships.
Sorry, I laughed at a really weird point there because I just had a thought that I think his book would have been better if he had done Think Like a Monk Fish. It would be so unexpected.
He also has the J. Shetty Certification School where students pay thousands of dollars to learn the Shetty Disciple. He's 14 million followers on Instagram and 6 million across his 2 YouTube channels.
So where's the lies?
Widely celebrated. So he tells in his books and countless podcasts and talk show appearances that he is a business student, that he was a business student preparing himself for a life of corporate ladder climbing until one day he attended a guest talk by a monk. He said he was so in awe that he seeks the holy man's tutelage. And it said it changed his life. It was the most captivating presentation I've ever been to. He spoke about selflessness, service, and kindness, and I was just hooked. He says, after graduating, he forgoes a life of material success to live as a monk himself. 3 years later...
That lasted about 2 seconds.
Yeah. 3 years later... He went on a gap year. Not even. Like, this reeks of someone who went on a J1. And
has an American accent.
Yeah. So 3 years after that, he has another revelation. His purpose in life is not to live the humble life of a monk, but to use his skills as a speaker to share wisdom with the world. So this begins his transformation into a public self-help personality and his swift rise to fame. So success is largely predicated on his riches to rags to riches backstory. His qualifications for being the world's most prominent mental health and spiritual wellness guru are... according to him, his spiritual awakening and the time he spent in the ashram in a village near Mumbai.
But
people close to Shetty now have questioned whether his conversion to a life of monkhood was quite so dramatic. So much of his spiritual education took place not in India, but in Watford.
A very enlightened place.
Yeah, a little town northwest of London.
Maybe that's not so bad.
But he was
Watford.
But he was not there because of spiritual discovery, but because he grew up in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness with his parents. So he says he spent time... Shetty says his time as a monk in meditation and religious study, but he also spent a lot of time making videos for social media and hosting lectures at universities in London. So he never discloses his association with ISKCON, which is the... organization,
the monk
because,
org.
Well, the organization, the Hare Krishna organization, because it has a problematic history, which includes allegations that in the 1970s and 1980s, members engaged in corporal punishment, child sex abuse, and on 2 occasions, conspiracy to commit murder.
Mm. So what organization hasn't?
True,
and they're all still going strong.
It is. It's
so grim.
It's true, just stronger than ever.
It's fucking so grim.
It was of the time, it's kind of ongoing at the moment, basically. The highlighting, and the Guardian have done incredible work highlighting the discrepancies now in his backstory, his time framing, his the places he said he was, whether he actually attended the monk's lecture, and whether, like, it just seems like a very convenient story that he's been telling. One of those kind of personal... I can imagine him at a lecture about personal branding, committing to this story and then sticking with it for years, and it's snowballing into something that is now very distant from the truth of what he actually engaged with.
Will it stop him?
So apparently this is not the first time there's been controversy surrounding, though, because in 2009, a YouTuber, Nicole Arbour, cited multiple examples of Shetty sharing quotes from philosophers, psychologists, and multiple other sources, portraying them as his own. And after that video, hundreds of posts were removed from his social media. It seems like this monk to millionaire is actually just a man who's very good at social media.
not...
And he's got nice eyes.
Amazed. But why does he need to be religion adjacent?
Because it's the being the monk that gives him the authority
to speak on such matters.
Yeah, because otherwise he's just a man from Watford.
Yeah, no one's going to fuck with a monk. Like.
I'll take the advice of a man from Watford any day. Like, I will, but I don't know if 64 million people will.
But have we not learned about the whole priests are bad? Monks in the priest fold for me.
But it's also, I suppose it's like, if you look at the school that he's charging people this...
It's like the masterclass stuff.
Yeah, but like masterclass is fucking... 75 quid for the year or whatever it is, or 99 quid for the year. This is $7,400, and he's claiming to be certified to teach people. There's a private exam that evaluates and gives it its accreditation. But
what are you credited with in the end?
A diploma in monkness.
Diploma
in whatever. Progressive arrangements. Like he's comparing this to like an MBA, and that it's fraud. I mean, like
it is.
It's just fraud. Yeah,
he's. I mean, this ain't gonna stop him.
It's actually.
I also think, like, on the scheme of things, this seems pretty like low grade. I think we've had grifters be outed for worse.
True, but in now the time of social media, if your whole career is based on the back of it, to think that you can spoof something,
yeah,
that's so clearly,
yeah, like provable, fucking spoofing Maya Angelou quotes,
yeah,
good life. But
it's gone too far for him. He's already a superhero.
He's already made his money, and the thing is, people. Yeah, I don't think people are going to go up. Are going to really invest.
Looking for a refund?
And like, really, if he's helping people and he's officiating, like Ben and Jen are so happy. Like, you know, like if it's good, what's the harm? You know,
it's good for the goose.
Look, he just faked it till he maked it.
True, and isn't that a lesson in and of itself?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I suppose the people who paid like $6,000 for an online course—that's
a filmy once moment.
That's on them.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they could maybe take it to the kind of what is it? The consumer watchdog.
Yeah,
and be like, I was promised 100% legitimate monk, and it turns out
still me
that it's that the monk that I tried to buy. Teach me was lying about his monk origins.
But don't you think that the whole ethos, and I don't know anything about the Hare Krishna, is it even a religion? I think it is. Would it surely in there, in those teaching, it would be that you cannot profit from the teachings?
Mm. I mean, it surely is, but he decided not to be a monk and use his
skills. Oh, he was just thieving.
But he says he was there for 3 years. It does undermine his services somewhat. But, I mean, it's just, like, take everything on the internet with a pinch of salt.
Absolutely.
Don't be listening to him and Stephen Bartlett for advice. They are just sober drunk men.
Sober drunk men who love the sound of their own voice.
Yeah. And say things that are really profound, like, why?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you guys remember a book called The Woman in the Window?
Yes.
It was a big, massive hit of a thriller that came out in, I want to say, 2018. And it was like, kind of followed in the footsteps of like Gone Girl and the girl on the train.
I was just going to say,
all these
woman yeah. at the bus stop.
Girl
in a window.
Girl with noun. Yes. If you just wanted to have a hit thriller in the 2010s, you just have to have a girl and a noun.
And a very dark in cover, like
the title.
Like navy blue, black covers, big yellow writing,
mm-hmm.
and windows or car lights, like a yellow element.
There was always, yes, yeah. like warning.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Achtung, yellow element. Okay. So this book, The Woman in the Window, was by a guy called AJ Finn, which was actually a pen name. So it was the pen name of a guy called Dan Mallory, who worked in publishing. And basically this was his first novel. And it like was a crazy big, huge book deal. Apparently there was like a 10-way auction bidding war on the book when it was first being shopped around to the publishers.
Because it was very soon after Girl on the Train, wasn't it?
And kind was of. Like Gone Girl was 2012, Girl on the Train 2015, so this was 3 years later. But yeah.
Yeah.
And they were all being adapted for films as well, yeah. so they stayed in the public consciousness. And, you know, it was a total hit. And it has been made into a film, I think. And no. It has the rights sold and all of the usual kind of stuff. And so Dan Mallory had been working in publishing for many years before his novel became like a massive splash hit. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, Dan, you know, he's brilliant and he's so charming. And he writes a great email and like, so, you know.
Was this his first book?
Yeah, first novel. And first book, full stop, yeah. So he had been an editor. So that would be on the other side of the process. So okay. He would have worked with authors on their books. There was like crime writers who were among his peers who remember when he was kind of coming up in the publishing world. So like there was one crime writer called Tess Gerritsen who remembers when he was an editorial assistant and she's like, oh, he was really, really charming and he wrote very good blurbs for the back of the book where it says what the book's about. And there was like a British academic who had met Dan Mallory when he was at graduate school in Oxford.
Ooh.
And this academic was like, oh yeah, Dan, so charming, so talented. Everyone says charming.
Okay.
It's fascinating. That just keeps coming
up. Is he
again
also handsome?
Very handsome, yeah.
Light up a room?
He kind of reminds, what?
Would he light up a room?
He'd light up a room.
Let's have a look at him. Have a look at him.
He's very attractive. And when he was at Oxford, he focused his studies on the Tom Ripley novels by Patricia Highsmith.
Oh, yeah.
So anyone who doesn't know the novels, they'd probably know the Talented Mr. Ripley film where Matt Damon plays Tom Ripley.
Great
And flick. They're like a series of novels that are all about this kind of like charming cipher, Tom Ripley, who kind of, you know, changes his identity and is an amazing mimic and is also a total psychopath. Anyway, so Dan is now in his late 30s. Well, he's probably in his early 40s now, but he was in his late 30s when the book came out. And he was living in New York. And after the book became such a massive, huge hit, he was on tour with the book across the world, which is like, this is not average book tour shit. Yeah. He was in like Spain and Bulgaria and Estonia and New Zealand and, you know, all over America, obviously. And so he did sort of develop a bit of a kind of, you know, spiel for when he was at these kind of events. And like that does happen if you're promoting something. Just a break
for the cover of the book, which is exactly as Cassie has described.
Yeah.
Yellow writing. Girl in a, go on. This is way bigger than it should have been for a person's first book.
Well, yeah, it was just huge for like not even just that it was a person's first book, but like it was just like they were describing him showing up as like at book events and people being like screaming as if he was like Harry Styles.
Oh, right.
He had
okay.
this momentary Harry Styles of literature thing.
Gas.
Right.
And like, obviously, because he was really good looking and as we've heard, charming. So basically he was down in New Zealand and it was September in 2018. And he was there at a literary festival, and there was other kind of people who were panelists on the literary festival there in the bar with him. So there was like a guy called Tom Scott who was like a screenwriter, and he said that his first impression of Dan was like that he was like had this incredible swagger, and that he just was so self-assured. And within seconds of them meeting and him sitting down, he was quick to tell Scott that he had the best-selling novel in the world this year. Oh. It's not a lie. And was
but
also
he loves to get it out there.
Very, yeah. Get that said up top. And then
I bet he said in a real casual, annoying way as well. He'd be like, oh, well, you know.
Oh, in a very charming way. Undeniably charming.
Best-selling book of the year, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of stress on a guy.
And he'd also sold the film rights for $1 million.
Fudge.
Yeah,
right?
It's great, isn't it?
The film was made in 2021 starring Julianne Moore.
Oh, Julianne Moore, very good.
Where and is so this going to go?
This guy, Scott, was like, listen, Dan was absolutely reveling in his newfound fame and
can
wealth.
Can I ask a question? You might not know the answer to this, which is something to ponder amongst ourselves. If he is, I mean, he sounds like a complete knob. But
he loves French bulldogs, Cassie. You guys would get on great.
I don't like
he's him. Gay. You could have dated him in your 20s.
Yeah. Oh. Or today, never say never. If he is such a narcissist, like he's coming across as a narcissist, why did he use a pen name?
Well,
do we know that in the story?
I'll tell you. I think he used a pen name.
Did you tell us that already?
No.
Okay, so
I told you that it was a pen name.
Oh, sorry.
So the name
Dan
on the book
Mallory
is
a pen.
No, Dan Mallory is his real name. AJ Finn is the author attributed to the woman in the window.
Good question. Why would a man who is lighting up a room?
But like often with pen names, it's not like concealing anything. People know from the outset that it's a pen name.
Oh, why would you?
Yeah,
buy?
It's like, you know, it's kind of different. Like Elena Ferrante, for example, that's different. Nobody knew who was behind that. But from the beginning with Women in the Window, people knew Dan Mallory was AJ Finn.
So
they
I
didn't
just
know.
Make up a pen name for myself.
Yeah.
What's the thinking behind it, so?
Kind of depends. Like, there's lots of different reasons why people would do it. And, like, yes, there's loads of people who stay behind the pen name and you don't know who they are. Or, like, their agents and their publisher will know who they are or whatever.
Oh, my God, I'm going to think of a really good one. I'm just thinking, it's going to have Cassandra in it anyway, because that's already a really
strong
name.
And then other people use it for, like, if they're going to write in a different genre, they
might use
a different name for their other work.
And if he's still editing.
Or, like, Stephen King has another pen name, and yeah, loads of people do.
I didn't know Stephen King had another one.
And J.K. Rowling.
J.K.
Rowling had one.
Other one is Richard Bachman, I want to say.
Maybe I'll take Cassandra out of mine then.
Don't think keeping Cassandra in would make much sense.
Well, I just wanted to be more, I want to drop the Delaney.
Richard Bachman.
Like Cassandra.
Yeah. Maybe.
Or
Dan. Great. Yes. Sorry. So Richard Bachman is a pen name Stephen King used kind of in the late 70s and early 80s. Oh. Anyway.
I would take Jennifer Big.
That would be good. Jen Big.
Well,
see, that's a problem. Because if you read Yellowface.
No.
Where you're having like a vague, deliberately vague pen name can suggest that you're taking on or you're more in tune with the needs of a minority community.
Oh, interesting.
Well, it's not like a deliberately vague name, but if it's a name that has like connotations
like
a different race.
Yeah.
So like the song was the name of the writer's pen
I
name.
See.
Yeah.
But you're okay, so Sophie White is within.
So I'm just fully upfront with my problematic. Yeah. So I think the reason he took the pen name was because he was in publishing. And knew people would know his name.
I didn't want to think he was getting special treatment.
I see.
Well, that, or as I was reading about him, I was like, I wonder, is it more that he didn't want the baggage of using his real name? Because he has left an absolute chaos in his wake as he's made his way through publishing for the last 2 decades.
But I thought he was lighting up rooms.
He was lighting up rooms.
With his lies.
I see.
So remember back to the literary festival in New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
Your man and the screenwriter, Scott, are on the panel together, and he heard Dan speaking, and he was really struck by it because, like, he obviously, Dan just had this incredible command of the room, and he kind of said that he was, like, going to, like, go off script, that he really wanted to share something personal for, as Scott understood it, for the first time.
Okay.
So they were all there, like, what's coming? Oh, yeah. My God. The huge superstar is going to share something with us for the first time ever. And he basically said that he had suffered depression for a long time, debilitating, and that he had undergone electroconvulsive therapy 3 times a week for 1 or 2 months, and that it had worked. And he said that he was very grateful, and that he still had electroconvulsive therapy treatments once a year. And Scott, who was there, said that there was this incredible surge of sympathy in the room, and you know, that he was kind of like opening up about such a difficult topic. I think people really spoke to people. And so he had previously mentioned electroconvulsive therapy. And so it wasn't the first time he'd ever brought it up, as he said. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I'm ever going to share this. But also, in the previous times that he had mentioned it, he had included it in a list of therapies that he had considered unsatisfactory.
I didn't work.
Yes.
Right.
In the years between 2001 and 2015.
Okay. So why now is he saying...
Yeah. So he'd been given a diagnosis of bipolar 2. Hey. And he had found relief through medication, he said. So very different story. And so he gave a talk in Colorado where he basically said that he had resorted to hypnotherapy, electroconvulsive therapy, ketamine therapy, and retail therapy.
I love retail therapy.
And so basically, no, I did it for 2 months and now I still do it once a year. So, I mean, look.
All right, yeah.
You know,
it's these things. Free here and there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so he was a great fucking talker. Like, very, very witty, charming, as we've heard. There was, Scott said, one in the Q&A section of this talk, I'd say this guy was a fucking nightmare to be on a panel with. You'd just be like,
shut up.
Just sit here, like, looking like a dumpy shit.
Yeah.
Fucking, and like, so one audience member was like, have you ever considered a career in stand-up, Dan?
Oh, God.
And Dan was like, huh. And so he had, though, this kind of... theme that, like, depression had kind of, you know, eroded his self-esteem and stuff like that. But that, like, now he was a huge success. And he would say of himself, I'm like Adele. I've thrived on both sides of the Atlantic. And he...
he's
so
absolutely...
Just FYI, 14% of our listeners are in the States.
He said that he had also come to accept that he was reasonably attractive. Or
it's a difficult thing to accept.
As he described it, semi-fit to be viewed by the semi-naked eye. And he said that...
I hate him.
He said that on a trip to China, he had been told this by his host family. But at a talk 2 weeks later, when he repeated the anecdote, it was a Japanese host family. So,
okay,
listen,
all right.
He's jazzing up anecdotes,
yeah,
to trot them out.
Major big deal.
That's fairly normal.
Yeah,
it's fairly standard. I mean,
you're just
it's
keeping
very
yourself
hard.
Entertained.
Like, you always say, like, how it, you know, it, truth is just easier because it's not as hard to keep track of the truth,
yeah,
as it is to keep track of your lies. But anyway, he sometimes, you know, tended to go a little bit further with these things. And so he said that, for example, when he was working for Little Brown in London back in the kind of 2000s, he was working kind of at a fairly like lower rung in the company. And between 2009 and 2012, a book called The Cuckoo's Calling had been published on his recommendation. And The Cuckoo's Calling is a thriller that, as you said, Cassie, J.K. Rowling has another pseudonym for her thriller books.
That's...
And that was one of them. That was the first one, I think.
Ah.
And so he also said that he had taught at Oxford University, where he had received a doctorate.
From Jay Shetty.
Now, Mallory doesn't have a doctorate from Oxford.
Oh, and that was a...
So some of these things are starting to get very kind of provable, yeah, shall we say. He also potentially read that manuscript, but it wasn't published on his recommendation. Also, he claimed that he worked with Tina Fey, and they said no.
Like, these are lies.
No, you didn't, pal.
Really...
On Tina Fey's book, like.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
what is he doing?
These kinds of things, sort of frustrating around, shall we say, him. But this stuff coming out during his press tour. See, that's what was happening. He was sort of telling these kind of anecdotes, and the anecdotes, facts were shifting from week to week. So people were getting a bit of an opportunity to be a bit like, last week they were Chinese, this week they're Japanese.
Yeah.
He says he has a doctorate from Oxford. This other person says he doesn't have a doctorate from Oxford.
He really needs to shut the fuck up now at this point.
So that was kind of it. But the thing was that this was coming as no surprise to anyone in publishing. And the thing is, I think a lot of people in publishing, when they heard Dan Mallory's book is coming out, I think there was a general consensus of,
Let's pass
the popcorn,
yeah,
let's see what happens. And so...
That's how I'd feel if you released a book and had to go on book tour. We're like, let's... like, this is not going to go well.
We have to
Big.
Start some kind of
just
like...
written.
Jen Big.
The complete guide to parasites and insects and everything else.
According
the world,
to Dr. Jen
the
Big.
World according to Jen Big.
Okay, so previous colleagues of Dan's have been like, right, Dan is obsessed with power and money.
Yeah.
But way more than everything else, he's obsessed with people having sympathy for him.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Oh, the meltiest of the
melts. The meltiest of melts. Because, like, power and money, you're just kind of like, all right. You're probably annoying. You're probably a narcissist. But, like, at least you're not pathetic.
I mean, yeah, when you said power and money there, I was like, money is nice.
Power is exciting. Sympathy? I don't know. So, anyway, lots of former colleagues then, were fairly, I think, enthusiastic to sort of come crawling out of the woodwork. Do you remember we were talking about the... book going up for auction, and all these different publishers were bidding for this manuscript. So how it works is, for anyone who's not like familiar, your agent will send the manuscript to a publisher on your behalf.
Yeah.
The editor will read it. They'll decide they want to bid on it. And then sometimes, like, if you've got a real hot book, you could have like three or four publishers all bidding, and it's a bidding war.
Cool.
And the price is going up and up and up and up, and you're just going, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Never happened. Might still happen. So basically,
you're only a youngin'.
People in the industry had read the book. So the book had the chops because
it was good. They wanted it.
Yeah,
and
it was being bid on.
I
read it.
It's a good book. Like, it's exactly one of those books.
Yeah, it's a thriller. It's a really good thriller. So anyway, halfway through the auction, right, they revealed the author's real name. So when they revealed that it was Dan Mallory, most of the publishing houses dropped out.
Fuck off.
Yes.
Because they knew him and he was a pain in the hole. But the book was still good.
Little bit of that. In the end, the publisher that he was currently working for, a publisher called William Morrow, were the ones who bought the rights to the book. But very interesting. So he'd worked in publishing for a decade in London and New York, right? And as I said, there were kind of rumors and things like that. People generally feeling a bit unnerved by him, or like they just would notice, you know, you work with someone and you just like notice that they are very like exploitative, or like they'll throw anyone under the bus for a bit of this, bit of that. You know what I mean?
Still surprising that they'd sort of ditch the book if it was that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they couldn't tell how it was to become.
Okay, yes.
You know,
okay.
They were like,
it's still a risk.
Like, it is, this is the thing. It's good. I'd struggle now to really remember the details of it.
What, just, the woman in the window?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was good. Yeah, no, I remember it.
Yeah, I remember
but it
wouldn't
well. Be like, it's not one of those books you'd go to recommend. It's no. ultimately easy and forgettable. Like.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you'd read you know, it it's a beach. Woman, she's agoraphobic, and she's stuck in the house, and she thinks she's witnessed a murder okay. across the street. It's very Rear Window.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's...
It's of a genre.
It's of a genre, as they say. And so, yeah, there was a colleague at William Morrow who told friends that, oh, there's this guy in my office, he's got a whole Talented Mr. Ripley thing going on. Obviously, Patricia Highsmith's a big kind of hero of Dan Mallory's. And then there was a crime writer that he worked for who actually had been hired to continue some of Agatha Christie's detective series novels. So basically, like, Agatha Christie's dead. Would you believe? Although if anyone could beat death, it could be her. Anyway, so they hired this other author. The estate hired this writer and was like, you can take some of the characters and continue the series, yeah. blah, blah, blah. Money grab, as they say. And she worked with... Dan Mallory on the series. He was like her editor and stuff, and she just started to like distrust everything that he told her because he was constantly telling her about being gravely ill, and she just
porky
there was
pies.
Something. I mean, I don't think you're not a crime writer without, I'd say,
some
kind of quite an
element.
Astute kind of mind.
Yeah,
you know. So then this person who's wrote a big long read for the New Yorker about it all got in touch with a senior editor at another New York publishing company where he'd worked, asking the guy, oh, would you give me a quote about working with Dan Mallory? How'd you find him? And the editor goes, my God, I knew I'd get this call. I didn't know if it would be you or the FBI. So basically, to go back to Oxford, they got an application from Dan Mallory, who wanted to write his thesis on homoeroticism in Patricia Highsmith's fiction, which, yes, support this very much. Mm-hmm. And it's a doctorate, so it's like a research undertaking. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of unusual, but the application included this long personal statement, which is not really the norm. It's not, you know what I mean? Like, you know, in America, famously, they do college applications where you have to do a personal essay, but like a doctorate is like a postgrad or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, apparently this essay that he included was astonishing and described unbearable family suffering. So...
And was totally unnecessary.
It was totally unasked for.
Yeah.
But basically it was because Dan had been a master's student at Oxford a few years earlier and he hadn't done that well. Mm. And so in the essay, he was like, his studies had been disrupted by visits to America because he had to nurse his mother who had breast cancer. And the professor who received the essay also said that Dan had said he had a brother who was mentally disadvantaged and also had cystic fibrosis. Mm. The brother died while being nursed by him. And Dan was also supporting the family, and the mother kind of gradually she died. And
are you going to tell me this isn't true?
Dan had said that his mother was incredibly stoic, and
so kept her death hidden. Nobody knew
hidden by being alive.
Fucking hell, what a chance.
So then, would you believe, though, at some point while Dan was nursing the mother, he got a brain tumour.
What
himself.
Are the
himself.
Yeah. And
they
he
do say cancer, highly contagious.
Highly contagious.
That's one thing they do say about cancer.
And lying about cancer, very Moorish.
Very Moorish.
Well, you start lying about the cancer of others and suddenly you're lying about the cancer of yourself.
But Dan is doing this in such a traceable... He's penning
paper
it down
trail, massive,
with his name to apply.
I know,
to a very well-known college who keep records of everything.
Yeah,
what the fuck was he thinking? Anyway, so presumably this got rumbled.
So this guy said that this is the kind of professor who was reading the essay. He said that Dan had said he didn't tell the mother about his own cancer because he thought it'd be very upsetting to her, and evidently. That sort of cleared up, meaning his tumor. I see. And then she died. And the brother had already died.
I see.
So this professor said that he really admired the essay because he knew it was very moving, but it also was very calmly written. And this professor was like editor of this literary magazine. And so he helped him get a place at Oxford. And then he also said to him, you should expand this essay for publication at my literary magazine, which is a massive opportunity, like a, you know. And so Dan was like, okay, I'll work on it a little bit. Obviously weighing up various
how public
things.
Can I make this?
And then he kind of came back to it and said that he actually... His mother was a very private person and she probably
still
wouldn't
alive.
Have wanted him to publish this. And so then, yes, Pamela Mallory, Dan's mother, is quite private. Her Instagram account is locked.
fucking hell.
She lives for part of the year in... I have Amagansett.
Where's that?
Amagansett. I think it's like upstate.
It's in Arkansas. It's
or is it Hamptonsy? Yeah, it's a hard one to say.
New York.
And right? So it's she's well. She was, you know, pictured dancing at a wedding some years after her supposed death.
Okay.
And yeah, so the Oxford professor only like just. It's only just being informed that Pam's alive. And he was like, is the father alive? In the account I read, I'm almost certain that the father is dead. John's alive. He was an executive at the Bank of America, and he and Pam have been alive and have been married for more than 40 years. So their family background's like very well-to-do, very upper middle class. You know, like they say in the States, waspy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I think I see hear wasp and I see yachts.
Yes.
I think there was yachts. And so very, very wealthy. And Dan has a brother called Jake and a sister called Hope and another sister called Elizabeth. And
did he ever have a brother? That the one that died?
Yeah.
Did he exist?
Yeah, he has a brother, Jake.
Oh, sorry, but he's alive.
He's alive.
Nobody has died.
But it was too late. So his doctorate was ongoing at this point. He'd been accepted in. He was working on it.
So in 1999, it seems like Dan wrote his first piece of feature length lies when he was in college. So he published an article which was describing events that took place when he was 17, a few years earlier, when he was living in a single parent household. And his piece was called Take Full Advantage of Suffering. And it opens, from a dim corner of her hospital room, I surveyed the patient who appeared tucked primly under the crisp sheets, not so much as recouping from surgery as steeped in a late evening reverie. She basically opens with watching his mother in the corner of the hospital room. I don't know whether she spied me as I gazed downward, contemplating the unjustly colloquial sound of lumpectomy. I think that's quite good writing. Or if some primarily maternal instinct alerted her to my presence, but in a coarse, ragged voice, she breathed my name. Dan. Remember, Pam's okay. Pam is okay. So he said in the piece that his mother had said, write to your colleges and tell them that your mother has cancer. And basically use your suffering to get into college. He didn't manage to get into Princeton, didn't work with them. He did manage to get into college. His mother did have cancer at some point in his teens, but made a full recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And so There was lots of, he went to college, he was big in the student public newspaper kind of world, and he was like kind of into the acting classes and like the theater side of college.
So much of
drama
it.
Kid.
Yeah, he was he reviewed films and gave The Talent of Mr. Ripley an absolute trouncing. He said Matt Damon was shit.
Well, there is a real bang of Disney child off him,
isn't there?
There is. It's his face. It's just, it's that American face. He looks like he would. He looks like a grown up Nickelodeon or Disney star, though.
Mm. Yeah, he's yeah. So he basically went on, got through college, and went into publishing, and hang on one sec. So he was back doing press for Women in the Window, and he claimed during the press that he had also suffered from agoraphobia, and then later said he never had the condition at all.
I see.
He said in one interview, they were asking him about the novel set in Harlem, and he was talking about
how he died
how
there.
When he was describing the protagonist's house, how he died there. He was saying in the interview, when he was describing the protagonist's house, he kept thinking of this house of a family friend that he'd stayed in when he was an intern in New York. And then he said that he'd once accidentally locked himself in the house's ground floor bathroom. And when he was eventually rescued by his host, he had been trapped for, quote, 22 hours and 10 minutes.
Right.
Wow, said the host. And Dan was like, so perhaps like that contributed to my fascination with agoraphobia. So just to recap, it's the downstairs loo of a house. And he's been in there 22 hours. And so then the host...
the door down, you stupid wallet.
Or just
the
host knock on
goes,
it.
Yeah.
The host goes, so you had the discipline to like not kick the door down. And then... Dan was like...
weakened by the leukemia.
Because Dan had said... he'd already said he had been in there for 22 hours. So then he was like, I tore a brass towel ring off the wall and I straightened it into a pipe and sort of hacked away at the area right above the doorknob. I did eventually bore my way through it, but by that point, my fingers were bloody. I was screaming obscenities. This is the point, of course, at which the father of the house walked in.
Dan.
And then the host asked him if he had resorted to eating toothpaste, and then Dan changed the subject. The bathroom chat has never been brought up again. He must have got a bit carried away. He was in there for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And 2 hours tops.
2 hours tops.
Did it even happen at all?
So, like I said earlier, he finished his master's at Oxford and he wrote a thesis. His thesis supervisor said that he was very good and that his thesis was very challenging and creative. And his emails were also great, wrote a great email. And apparently these emails were so good that like different editors that he was in touch with were like, Dan, you should write like a Dave Sedaris type a collection of humorous essays.
Just make them be.
Except Dave Sedaris's are true.
Yeah.
And
just
so
write fiction, Dan.
The thesis supervisor was like, by the end of the master's, Dan was making frequent trips back to America, and he told his supervisor, you know, obviously it's to address his illness. Mm. And the supervisor was like, I didn't ever press him on details. But he also knew that Dan's mother had a life-threatening illness, and alas, she did die. So thesis supervisor also really admired Dan's stoicism. Dan finished his master's, went back to New York, and he got straight into working for an imprint of Random House in publishing. And he said in his interview that he had a special love for popular women's fiction. Mm-hmm. And that this was born out of reading it to his mother when she was gravely ill with cancer.
What? Why did he have to say
He then it? Later said he had brain cancer himself.
Why is he doing this?
He got the job. So now he's into the lie. And so he... yeah, the colleagues were all like mixed, very, very charming. I think some people were on his level and were like, Dan's so fucking up his own hole.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of other people really taken in by it. And then he was dying to climb, do you know, that kind of way. And he often stayed late in the office and worked on his boss's computer. And in 2007, so this is like 10 years before the publisher of the book, Dan announced that he'd be leaving the company because he wanted to go and do his doctorate at Oxford. He was obviously at the time working on his special little essay that got him the place. And he would work out of Linda Morrow's office, and she was like the absolute head honcho. And then they started to find plastic cups filled with urine.
No, why do men do this?
Both in and near her office.
What was he doing?
Now, people like just were very suspicious that it was Dan, but they could not prove it.
Surely however, there was a plant around. Like, if you're going to relieve yourself and not go to the loo, like, find there are better things to do than storing the piss in a bottle.
Bring it home with you.
Bring it home with you, piss in a pan plot, piss out a window.
Go to the simple toilet. Or go simple to the pleasure. Now, he was like, I did not do this. The piss cups stopped right after he left the company. Never another instance. So he moved from there straight back to Oxford to undertake the doctorate. And there was a bit of unexplained spending on an old corporate card that... that they believed he still had in his possession. And he was confronted by them over email. And he was like, okay, sorry, yes, I think I may have used the card in error. But also, I am also having cancer. Cannot keep it out of an email. And so then he was doing well at Oxford. He was studying Highsmith, all this kind of thing. He... doesn't seem to have actually published any scholarly articles, and it's not really clear how much of the doctorate he really kind of completed. But they do know that generally a doctorate takes, like, it's like the PhD, 3 or 4 years. And by midway through his second year, Dan was enthusiastically signing emails, Dr. Daniel Mallory.
Naturally. Oh my goodness.
And Oxford had to come out and confirm that Dan never finished the doctorate. I'm like, even a half done doctorate's pretty impressive.
Just the D.
Like, he must have been doing something.
He's and absolutely it's all very grafting, hard. Though.
Like, he's kind of graft, isn't it? And so then he was there working away on a novel at the time as well, apparently. He said his thesis supervisor, you know, would invite him for drinks and dinner and stuff like that. And Dan would often decline, saying that he was tied up because he was doing something supporting cancer-related organization. And the supervisor was very struck by his modesty. And, you know, and I never would have known that he was doing all this work with the cancer organizations, except that he'd write to me and say, I'd love to be there, but I'm going to be doing a long day with this cancer organization. So then basically one day, this guy, the supervisor, literally just started getting bounce backs from the emails he was sending his Oxford email address, Dan's Oxford email address, and basically discovered that Dan had been very ill, and an illness had disrupted his studies. And so that was the end of it. And then so Dan, meanwhile, went down to London and started looking for work in publishing, describing himself as a former editor at the previous publishing house where he had left all the piss cups. Now, he had been an assistant back then, which is absolutely not an editor. He said that he had two PhDs. He had the Highsmith-related dissertation from Oxford, and he had another one from an American university, this from the psychology department of an American university for research into Munchausen's disease. Sorry, Munchausen's syndrome. So there's absolutely no university that's like, Dan did a doctorate with us.
Oh, God.
But he did enjoy calling himself a double doctor quite a lot.
Double D.
So he got a job in an imprint of Little Brown, and this was in the UK. And apparently, so this is 2009, so again, we're probably about 8 years before the publish of the book. And so when people in New York heard that he was suddenly an editor in Little Brown, people were like, what? No. Dan literally was an assistant, pissed in a lot of cups, spent money on the company credit card and disappeared.
Yeah.
And now he's an editor. So they were very confused. And they said that, like, you could get by on a lot of charm. Mm. I think especially back then. And he made a good first impression, as we know, a lot of people kind of saying that he's very, like, and this is another, like, this is a hot person thing.
Yeah.
He's very attractive. And, like, that really fucking helps. And that he was very, very funny and charming. Kind of would mention casually that he'd done a bit of modeling, just runway, oh, just for guest jeans. Or that he was on the cover of Russian Vogue.
He was.
And imagine how hard it'd be to verify that lie back in 2009.
Impossible.
It's actually a perfect lie for 2009. Mm-hmm. And he also was friends with Ricky Martin. So, yeah, he was getting on very well. Obviously, a lot of people being a bit like, ugh. And then a lot of people very seduced by him. So he was now turning 30 and he was kind of not being seen at publishing parties and things like that. And he would kind of say that he was maybe suffering from kind of crippling shyness and things like that. And he sort of heard in 2010, he told his boss at Little Brown about that he'd been received a job offer from a competitor. Mm-hmm. He was promised a raise and a promotion. And so then they said, okay, we'll
match the offer.
Match it, yeah. And so then it was, it had become widely known to his coworkers that he had an inoperable brain tumor, unfortunately. Now, he'd survived earlier bouts with cancer, but unfortunately, this doctor had told him that the tumor would kill him off by the age of 40. Which is really not how those prognoses work. And so what he said, what he seemed to be saying was that the cancer was fatal, but would absolutely allow him to live for another decade. And so coworkers were very upset and worried about him. He started taking time off work to seek experimental treatments. And he also would wear like a baseball cap even indoors.
Okay.
So people signaling. Were like, yeah. Okay, it's obviously chemo, maybe hair loss. He told everyone that he hadn't told his parents yet about the diagnosis. And
but he's told everyone else.
Yeah. But he said that his parents were very cold and remote, or sorry, to quote, aloof and unaffectionate. Yeah. And so he said that he told everyone they were about to close for Christmas in 2011. And he was like, no, my parents have no interest in seeing me. So I'm going to make an exploratory visit to Dignitas.
Holy fuck.
So just for himself, I presume. Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, Dignitas is the assisted death facility in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. A Dignitas death occurs in a small house, not in like a big facility.
Mm.
And there's no setup for people visiting.
Of course not.
To be given tours.
Yeah.
For future potential use. He returned and said he found the visit very peaceful. Then it was a few months later that his boss went to a dinner party and sat beside the CEO of the publishing house that had tried to poach Dan. And that was when they did a little bit of chatting and realized there was absolutely no competing offer, obviously.
Oh,
and so when she challenged him, Dan was like, that CEO is lying.
Naturally.
And he's lying because I once rejected him sexually.
Mm.
And so he left Little Brown soon after, and there isn't like a lot of, it's not very clear whether how much of it was to do with that and how much of it, well, like, I think as well, if someone's sitting in front of you and accusing somebody else of like inappropriate sexual behavior,
yes,
just really casually, and I think you just generally were kind of like,
move away from this person,
maybe just go. And so he left, and a lot of the colleagues didn't really know that there was much more behind it. And basically 2 weeks before he'd finished out there, he had an amazing new job as executive editor in a HarperCollins publishing house in New York. And his starting salary was going to be $200,000 a year.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And he moved into an apartment in a 60 floor tower with a pool in Midtown Manhattan. For fuck's sake.
Whoa.
Why are we so bad at life? And then you hear about this guy. It's mad. It's mad. Anyway, like, so his time in London had just ended in a ball of flames. Like, personal flames.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, any other, moving on to any other job where in your previous job you lied about getting an offer and then accused a person in the industry of like, of trying, of revenging you for not accepting, sexual advances. Anyway, so, and then also there was like, when he came to the New York office, he spoke with a British accent, obviously.
Oh no.
And used words like brilliant and bloody and where's the loo? And as one of the colleagues put it, he was this grown man walking around with a fake accent that everyone knew was fake.
So fucking weird that they just let him away with it.
Why? Yes.
Because he was kind of good at his job. So.
And I think people come back to the email a lot and they're like, the emails, he gives a good email game.
How good are these emails?
Amazing, obviously.
Well, here we go. There's a lot of email coming right up. So basically, that winter, so he'd only joined in like the late summer. That winter, he just stopped coming into the office and people were like, what is happening? But nobody was told anything. And so then it was in February that of 2013 that loads of people who knew him professionally in London received a group email from Jake, his brother,
okay,
who died previously, but now he's alive and he's writing emails. And they're writing really good emails, actually. So Jake, who they had never met, was suddenly writing to a whole group list from a Gmail address, Dan's brother Jake at gmail.com, maybe. Mm. And he said that Dan was going into hospital the next day for a removal of a tumor and that he was having complicated surgery with several high-risk factors. There was the possibility of paralysis or loss of function below the waist. But Jake went on, quote, Dan has been through worse and has pointed out that if you can make it through Love Actually Alive, this surgery holds no terrors. Dan was going to eat an early dinner of sashimi and then read a book about dogs until bedtime. He wrote, Dan was treated terribly by people throughout his childhood and teenage years and into his 20s, which left him a very deeply lonely person. So he does not like, trust many people. Please keep him in your thoughts.
Dan. What are you doing?
In the next day, Jake sent an email to all of Dan's publishing acquaintances in New York, so the other side of the Atlantic. And in that email, it noted that Dan would be undergoing surgery soon. So remember, the previous email, the surgery was going to be happening this day, as in like the next day, but this day. Anyway, so it was a tumor in his spine. It wasn't the first or even second time that Dan has had to undergo this sort of treatment. So he knows the drill, although it's still an unpleasant and frightening proposition. He says that he is looking forward to being fitted with a spinal fluid drain and that this will render him half man, half machine. So lots of people started writing back, distressed.
Yeah.
They were like, loads of people were just like, was like, this is terrible. What can we do? Exactly. So after a while, Jake was kind of continuing to write back to people and writing back to this one particular editor, and you know, the responses were very quippy and upbeat.
And there's no one like, oh no, this is pre-GDPR. They're like, where'd you get my email address, Jake?
Yeah. And like, a lot of people were like, Jake is as witty as Dan. They're very witty brothers. And then the next week, Dan writes an email.
He's back.
He said, I wanted to thank you for your very lovely email to my brother. Now, both brothers spell email E.M.A.I.L.
Mm.
So it's very, like, that's exactly how somebody would be caught out in an Agatha Christie novel, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, it was, it seemed like that maybe Dad was Jake. Mm. So Jake is 35. He is a real person. He is shorter than Dan. He, while he was supposedly by Dan's side in New York writing mm-hmm. those emails, he was actually with his fiance, getting professional pre-wedding photographs taken. And that they were on Facebook where they look very happy and it doesn't look like he's beside his dying brother at all. So then, on the 14th of February, Jake sent everyone in New York the update, basically saying that Dan was in for an overnight surgery. So like a surgery that's going to be 7 hours long and begins at like 1 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
which seems unusual.
Yeah.
Very.
For a scheduled surgery. What
unlikely.
Time will we have it at? He told everyone that Dan had experienced significant blood loss, more than is common during spinal surgeries. So it required 2 transfusions, but it seems the tumor has been completely removed. And his very first words upon waking up were, "I need vodka." And so a few people sent vodka
mm-hmm.
As presents. And that, so yeah, they seem to have a lot of commonalities in style, the mm-hmm. emailer and Dan and Jake. And he basically was like then telling everyone, okay, I'm going to be, you know, resting up now. I have to wean off my sweet Vicodin. And basically Dan was kind of suggesting to colleagues that they might meet for drinks in a week or two. And then kind of suggesting to UK colleagues that they might meet in a week or two. You know, that kind of way.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
telling them all the completely different random things. Then, 3 days later, shock, Jake's back. Dan had an allergic reaction to a new painkiller, went into shock and cardiac arrest. He was taken to the hospital on time and treated immediately and is out of intensive care, still on a respirator and under sedation, though. And while this setback is not welcome, it is not permanent either. And at least Dan can now say he has had 2 lucky escapes in the space of 2 months. The worst has passed and we are hoping he can go back to his apartment this weekend and pick up where he left off. This would daunt a mere mortal, but not my brother. Imagine writing that about yourself.
Amazing.
To a whole load of like
did
professional
he just
people.
Of, what did he's looking for sympathy en masse.
Yeah.
But he's locked up in his apartment at this time, presumably afraid to leave in case he's spotted anywhere.
Unbelievable.
I don't know if he's got that cop on. I'd say he's so, these lies are so
brazen.
Intense and brazen that he does not care because he's saying different things as well. And one, in the instance with the UK colleagues, he's a brain tumor and in the
spinal
with the others. So
okay.
like he's not even consistent with his lies.
So a couple of weeks again then, right, Jake's back onto the London contacts. And he says that Dan's in decent shape, but he's very upset. He's upset particularly about an email that seems to have been written by an ex-colleague at Little Brown that seemed to poke fun at him. And Dan felt utterly let down and was withdrawing into himself like a turtle. These
no.
are all quotes.
Oh, what did the email say? "This is lies. We know you're Dan, Jake."
I know. I bet you it was something like that. Jake also said that Dan had been working with abused children and infants at the hospital where he was treated.
Oh, my God.
In that famous abused children wing.
Yes.
That they
yes.
let people who
have
are
all hospitals.
Wheeled in on a respirator, somehow helping others.
Yes. He said that he had been talking to a little girl whose arm had been broken for her. And Dan's arm was broken for him when he was a baby.
Oh, stop.
So it starts to hint at parental abuse
yeah.
in
oh
these
my
emails.
God, I can't. I'm exhausted just listening to the second. I imagine being in the room with this man.
Ugh.
So at the same time as that email was sent, right, that was saying how Dan was very upset about the email that seemed to be poking fun at him from the Little Brown colleague. Another email was sent from an anonymous email to a woman who worked at Little Brown, calling her one of the nastiest cunts in publishing. Her inbox is chaos tonight.
Love that.
She's got Jake and the abused children award. And so then they actually approached Dan at the time asking him about that abusive email, and he was like, absolutely not. But no email ever came back through. So anyway, I'm sorry, there is a lot here, but he's been busy telling lies for fucking years. Whistle stop tour of the next couple of years. Like, he buys a one bedroom apartment in Chelsea for $625,000. The man spent he spent most of fucking February and March just in bed writing emails under the guise of a brother. So anyway, basically they either thought that like his cancer story was true, or decided that like bringing up that it was fake might be more awkward.
That's the thing about a cancer liar. You cannot
question it.
Turn around to someone and be like, you do not have cancer.
You don't have cancer. You simply couldn't. He did bring in deals and things like that, but like he did often, like, I don't know. I mean, I think it was definite like Emperor's New Clothes stuff with him, you know. And so he would bring in books that had already made it big in the UK and kind of buy the American rights, things like that. Obviously, there was literary agent has kind of said that he thinks that it's like the whole Jake thing was like a bizarre kind of game,
yeah,
but that it wasn't like threatening and it wasn't a scam, so it was like hard to pin it down, and it seemed a bit like performance art.
Yeah, so
but
this
like
is the thing,
everybody has somebody they've lost to cancer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrendous, but Have you seen what the plot of his latest book is?
Yes, because I'm reading it.
Okay. Well, you tell
me. Do you want to say?
No, no.
So anyway, they said that in publishing, because so much of publishing is based on bluster and kind of talking shit up.
Yeah.
You know, that like somebody like Dan kind of can float around being hot, being
talking
like
shite.
Talking
shite. He's also gay. You can't really go against the gay.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. No one can say
shit. Don't
want to
be a homophobe.
Yeah.
He said though that recently, one of the people who was on this big email chain list said that he went to meet Dan for a drink a couple of years later and was like, you know, are you well now? And Dan was like, yeah, I'm much better, except I had this eye problem. And then the guy who was meeting him for the drink was like, and how's Jake? Like, you know, God, we felt very close to Jake. And Dan was like, oh, he's dead. He committed suicide.
Naturally.
And the guy who was having the drink with him was like, and that was the moment I knew that I would never get in touch with Dan Mallory again.
Ever.
Too insane. And so, funnily enough, one of his authors, who is a kind of a crime writer, seemed to take some inspiration from Dan. In one of her books, there's like a seductive man who lies about a fatal disease and then defends the lie by pretending to be the man's brother. And the brother's name is Blake.
Come on.
They're all becoming suspicious about the cancer thing. It's very hard to pin down. And then you see, when A Woman in the Window came out, there was actually kind of accusations of plagiarism a little bit in that, like, do you remember the film Copycat with Holly Hunter and Sigourney Weaver?
Yeah.
It's actually really good. The kind of top line of both the book and that film are very similar. Like, American woman mid-career is a psychologist and with a PhD and is trapped in her home by agoraphobia, and she has a personal trauma and she drinks too much. And anyway, that all is like the plot of both The Woman in the Window and Copycat. And then there was another book that also kind of accused him of plot nicking. But I do think when it comes to stuff like that, It's one thing to sort of take an idea, like a sentence or two of an idea. It's like another thing to execute it, and then to execute it really well. And I do think, like, Women in the Window, like, I was gripped.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt he's a talented writer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, talented, like, for that type. Because even I'm reading the new one, and I am a bit like, well, was I just a bit taken in by the first book? It's not very good. Mm. Not very good.
3.2 on Goodreads.
He did absolutely decide that he was going to emulate The Girl on the Train and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, like, that's pretty much him. His new book is out.
He's out. And he's doing brilliantly.
I think it's doing
Give us the plot summary of the new book.
It came out and it was like already years delayed.
As you were saying, and it was supposed to release in 2020, which would have been a great time to bring out a fucking book when everyone's sat at home doing nothing except for drinking. And it was delayed until this year. It debuted at number 12 in the New York Times sellers list, and it kind of fallen off. It's got 3.2 out of 5 on Goodreads. They're saying there's some reviews saying that it's exceptional, but every single review references the even better story, which is his
actual life
in which 12,000 word New Yorker. Is it New Yorker?
New Yorker. Yeah.
So to read that instead. But the plot of the book.
Do read it instead.
The plot of the book that I just read here seems to be really interesting, because it is about a Sebastian Trapp is a famous mystery writer with a mysterious past of his own, and he is dying. He invites his longtime pen pal and fan, Nicky Hunter, to come stay with him and his family in his San Francisco home to write a personal memoir for him and only his family's eyes. Now, that is the plot of Seven Husbands for Evelyn Hugo.
That's true.
That is the exact
another
plot.
Shit book.
What?
Okay,
Cassie,
guys,
it's shit.
Oh my god, no, it's fabulous.
We have to wrap.
Okay,
all right,
Godspeed. Sophie, that was epic. Thank you, Dan, wherever you are, dying of some next illness that I'm
thank
sure we'll find
to
out.
All the con men everywhere who just constantly entertain and give us things to talk about.
And thank you, patrons. See you over on the main.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.